Hi, I'm Katie, and you're listening to the Home Ed Voices podcast, where I talk to people about their home education adventures and experiences here in the UK. This is episode number 4, and this week I talk with Jean, the messy mum on Instagram. We talk about children who start reading later and then catch up. We celebrate the early reader books that are not great literature and why it doesn't matter. We talk about the cost of home education and what you need to consider when you're starting out. It's a bit of a monster episode, so I've split it in two, and part two will be posted in a week's time. And now, on with the interview. This week I get to speak to Jean from The Messy Mum. Hello!
Hi!
Thank you very much for coming.
That is more than okay.
Right, let's start the interview with, tell me a bit about your family.
We have got me and my husband, Mark, and we have Anya, who's 8, and Zoe, who's 3.
Do you have any pets? People often mention their pets.
No, we don't. Not at the moment.
Excellent. So how did you start home educating?
Well, it was after I had Zoe. Anya was already in the school system at our local C of E primary school. And I had Zoe, and I very quickly realised that I missed Anya, and that I had this moment where I thought I didn't have my babies so I could give them away every day. So we started discussing home education as an option. And obviously I had all the same questions that people ask me in the street now, you know, what about socialization? And, you know, all the stereotypical kind of questions and misgivings and things like that. So I did an awful, awful lot of research. We know a lot of people obviously come to home education quite quickly with a very snap decision because something's gone wrong in the school system for them. Yes. But for us, it was really slow. We took our time. I read so many blogs and books, and it was that. And then towards the end of year one is when they start to teach a bit more formally. It's not through play as much anymore. Yeah. And Anya went from being basically top of her class, absolutely flying, to getting into trouble on a daily basis. And she hated reading. She was like, I absolutely hate reading, mummy. She was in tears every night when we tried to, you know, force reading on her, because that's what we were told we had to do. Yeah. And it broke my heart. If you come to my house, it's like a library. I need an extra room for books, you know, in an ideal world. So for a child of ours, you know, to grow up in a family of books, you know, book readers, yeah, to say, I hate reading, mummy, and be in tears about it. I thought this just isn't right. She shouldn't hate reading at 5. So we decided it was near the end of year one for her anyway, so we thought, let her finish out the school year, we'll tell them that she's probably leaving, so her class all had a chance to say goodbye and she had a chance to say goodbye to her class. And then we used the summer holidays as a trial run. So we kind of said, look, if we can hack the 6 weeks of the summer holiday, because you know what it's like in the summer holidays when you're a school mom, it's like so intense. Sometimes, you know, I know mums who can't wait for the end of the holidays just for a break. But actually, our summer holiday went beautifully and we deregistered her on the first day back at school in September. So she never went back. And it was the best decision we've ever made.
Yeah. So how long ago was that? So it was year one and she's...
She would be year 4 now in school.
Yeah,
she'd be, yeah, summer term of year 4. So it's been, she's been out of school now longer than she was ever in school.
Yes.
I realised this the other day and I was like, oh my goodness, like it was a strange realisation. Like, I've been doing this longer now.
Yeah, totally. Can we take a slight detour? My eldest, who's 9 now, learned to read but didn't like reading, and so obviously, you know, and we've home educated since the beginning, and I was, you know, and I read all the things, and thank goodness for all of the home ed parents who've come before us who were like, if it takes longer, it's fine.
It's fine.
Not like in school. If, you know, like if they start reading at 9 or 10 or 11 or whatever, they'll go really quickly. Like, yeah, if there's not a problem, and you'll know there's, you know, you'll have an idea if you think there's a problem, then, like, yeah, just give them some time.
And so, you know, we went through our reading program and he did the work, you know, he did the table work I put in front of him and mostly didn't complain about it, but didn't want to read books. And I kind of really pulled back from that. And then last summer, he picked up a book that I was reading because he wanted to read, you know, like a read aloud, and he wanted to read more.
Yeah.
And read a couple of pages that night. And then, you know, by the end of the holiday was like, if we're going to have a wait around at a restaurant, I'm taking my book with me. And hasn't stopped since then. So can you, what happened with regards to reading? What's happened with regards to reading over the last few years?
So obviously when we took her out of school, the moment the summer holidays started after her last kind of few days, we just completely pulled back. We kept reading to her because she has a real love of stories. She's an amazing storyteller now.
Yeah.
The complexities and things. But we just pulled back. We went back to just reading together, me reading to her. She would point out words that she knew, which she enjoyed doing, but we never pushed it. We left her alone. And I kind of think that's all we did. You know, we just left her alone. We didn't push her. She picked up books when she wanted to pick them up. And it was scary. You kind of have to trust in your child, keep an eye on it so that you can say, actually, we do need to kind of sneak some reading in there somehow, kind of encourage her. But she did it all on her own. She did have the basic skills from school.
Yeah.
So I've got Zoe, who's three, who I'm going to have to do all the kind of phonics and letter sounds and all that kind of stuff with.
Yeah.
So school for Anya did the beginning work, but because she hated it, we left her alone. She still had those skills. We, you know, at bedtime, she had like three books. It was ridiculous. So bedtime stories took a really long time.
Yes.
Anya. But like this morning, she walked down, she walked through the front room door, and she's got Harry Potter, the Philosopher's Stone up against her face that she's reading already as she's walking down the stairs.
Yeah.
And she's now independently reading the Harry Potter series, which is she's nine in July. So I am really happy with where her reading is sitting. She occasionally comes across tricky words and she knows how to work through that, whether she sounds it out, stretches it out, or whether she just comes and asks, you know.
Yeah.
So now I think leaving it alone, just reading stories as much as the child wants, has really worked for us with Anya. And it was just that respect of you don't force her to read. There's been weeks and weeks where she hasn't picked up a book, but that was quite a while ago. Now she's got a pile of books she's worse than me. There's like a mountain of books. She's like, that one's next, and then this one. The other day she was reading three books at the same time. It's, you know, now she's very much a reader, and it was because we respected her process of just taking her time and not ramming it down her throat in the way that the school system tries to. I know the school system have a reason behind everything they do, but that forced reading for us was just too much for Anya. It really, really upset her and pushed her in the opposite direction. So by just slowing down and leaving it up to her, that's what worked for us.
Yeah, I found that, like, the early readers and stuff, like with my eldest, he loved audiobooks. We read to him all the time. His comprehension of stories meant that actually we could read, you know, we could read quite complex read alouds and things like that. And he loved it. And then he would have to sit and read an early reader because that's what I thought you should do. And he wasn't interested in it. It wasn't the kind of story he wanted to read. It didn't, it doesn't, you know, he knew he was just going through us, you know. And I think you're right. You just, like, I was so scared. I was scared he would never learn to read because that's what everyone's always scared about.
Yes.
I didn't think there was a problem, and I knew he loved stories, but I was scared he was never going to learn to read. And I was scared at the same time I was going to kill his love of reading by pushing it really hard. And so, yeah, I think, yeah, it is a, it, sometimes it's a waiting game.
Yeah, like my husband and kind of bedtime stories was always their time together.
Yeah.
So I'd read to her if he wasn't available at bedtime, but it became like this wonderful ritual between them. And he read her the Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe series, all, I think it's seven books. They read all of those, and they read all of the My Little Pony stories and all these kind of things.
Yeah.
So he was reading for a long time. He was reading the complex books, the stories that she really wanted to hear.
Yeah.
And then slowly but surely, she started to pick those books up herself. You know, I think the main one that she started with was the Rainbow Magic Fairy series.
You know, I was just about to say, did she go through? Well, because actually I think it's a really important point, because although I have seen less discussion of twaddle, and I'm using bunny ears when I talk about
yeah.
it, I was just literally just about to say, did she end up reading one of those series that's got like a million books that are like really formulaic? But because my eldest went through literally about 40 Beast Quest novels.
And then, we've got some of those.
See, and then he read loads of those, and then he just started every so often dipping his toe into something else.
Yeah.
And then by the end of it, he was reading stuff, and then he went back to Beast Quest and was like, well, these are too easy now. And he just like naturally put them aside. So go on, you say about, you know.
Yeah, the fairy books, she got the book set for Christmas one year. So it's like, I think it's 52 books. So there's a book for every week of the year.
Yeah.
And she's only about halfway through, because by the time she was about halfway through all of those, she was like, well, yeah, this is boring for me now. Or it was just too easy. I think she naturally, once a book became very, very easy and she was flying through them in like a day, suddenly she was like, well, I want something harder. So she could have very easily carried on reading that series, but I think she naturally wanted to be challenged as a reader. So I was really surprised. She's only just started Harry Potter. She's just at the Sorting Hat chapter for any Harry Potter fans out there. But I thought when she said, can I read Harry Potter? I was like, pick it up, have a go. That's fine. You know, but I was surprised. I'm thinking, blimey, she's really doing this. I didn't think she was quite there with her reading skills, but she's, you know, she loves the Harry Potter series. You know, we've watched all the films, she adores them. So I think if they're allowed to just pick something that inspires them and fires them up, then they will teach themselves to read, because they're so desperate to get through that story. But it was, I think the twaddle, like you said, air quotes, those kind of books that are, you know, you look at them and you think, oh my gosh, she's getting nothing from this. Just let them read them, because that's what she wants. That's what they want at that time. And even if it is a ridiculous story and you think there's nothing educational about this, she's not getting anything from it, it's still those skills that she's picking up. You know, it doesn't matter what she's reading, as long as she's reading.
Yeah, it's practice. And that's what they're built to be. You know, practice books.
Like, yeah,
they're just there for them to, you know, they're manageable. The chapters are a manageable length, and you know, some of them have illustrations in. My 7-year-old, she's been reading the Princess in Black books, which unfortunately there aren't enough of, and most of them aren't in the library service, which is a problem, because she just didn't glomp onto anything else.
Yeah,
but she likes them because she doesn't want a chapter book that has long chapters with low pictures.
Yeah.
And, you know, but she likes that, and she can read, unfortunately, she can read one of those in a day and be like, fum, I read that.
Yeah. We had to, the Judy Moody books, Anya finished the whole Judy Moody series like a month or so ago. But she read like two in one day. I'm thinking, I can't afford all these books. No. The library's taking weeks to chase them down, and she's like, I need it. It's like a drug to her. You know, she's like, I need the next book, Mom. I need it now. Like, it's a wonderful thing to see that kind of sudden, and it was a wonderful change that happened really gradually, from her going, I hate books, Mummy, being in tears every night when we tried to get her to read, to being a complete book monster, dragging us into all the bookshops. You know, at charity shops, she's always straight to the bookshelves. Car boot sales, she's always hunting down books. It's a completely different child. It's amazing.
And my impression is that's what happens if you wait.
Yep.
Like, so
I've heard time and time again the same story.
And it is scary when you're going through it. Like, you know, but when you come out the other side, you know, I think, as you know, as both you and I have, you just want to go, yeah, they were all the people who said it was going to be okay. They were right. It was okay.
It is. There was that middle ground where I thought, I'm not reading enough with her. She's not reading enough. She hasn't read a book in weeks. You know, it's that massive fear. But I'm the same. You know, I can go weeks without reading a book. You know, when you've just read loads and you're suddenly like, oh, I just want to read magazines. That's it. I don't want to read a book right now. My brain's not in the place for a book. And I think it's just that they have these massive gaps of not reading much, and it can be terrifying. But then suddenly they're picking up, like Anya, picking up Harry Potter, flying through it, and you're thinking, goodness, when did that happen? How did you do that without me realizing?
Yeah.
It is, you do have to, don't get me wrong, it's important to be aware of where they are, and it's important to kind of encourage it as much as you can without being pushy and without making it into a negative. But you do have to have some kind of guts and trust that it will happen. You know, because it has, for us, we've been lucky. It's just overnight, she's suddenly reading books that I wasn't expecting her to read. And it's lovely to see.
Yeah, totally. And the thing is, there are places online where if you're concerned that there might be like an underlying problem, where you can find information out. You can find things where, you know, I might have to hunt this out and see if I can find stuff in the show notes. But there are things where, you know, there are little games that you can play with kids and things like that to see, you know, to be looking for particular things. If you thought that maybe they needed to be assessed for like for dyslexia or something like that.
Yes.
So it's not like, oh, just don't worry about it. It's going to come, because, you know, like, as you say, like there's the grounding in, you know, letter sounds and phonics and sight words. Sight words were a really big one for us. That was like, where I was like, oh, I need to really, you know, like add these into our day so that I know that they have those words, which I was trying to explain sight words to my eldest now, and he's like, yeah, but I just know those. It's like, you don't just know those, you know those because we work quite hard on you knowing those.
Yeah, I worked for that.
Exactly. He doesn't see that, you know. But you know, you keep an eye on it, and you know when you know when they're making mistakes, and
when there's a problem, you know,
it could be a problem,
you know. It's
It
is just that kind of keeping an eye on things. And we do a lot of kind of playing. So we would have known if there was an issue. Don't get me wrong, Anya, sometimes I think it's mirror letters. Like when she writes, she'll get D and B mixed up and things like that. So we're aware of those kind of small issues that we need to work through with kind of understanding words and letters and things.
Yeah.
But I must admit, because Anya was in the school system and they did all the kind of initial groundwork of that kind of phonics and letter sounds and sight words and things, I'm doing it all on my own this time with a three-year-old, with Zoe.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, oh my goodness, this is really going to be a test to how well I can do this. I'm a bit scared. But she does seem to be, she recognises all of our names and she recognises letters, and we play I Spy, but instead of something beginning with A, we say something beginning with A. And we use games and sounds and things like that. So hopefully I'll get it right with Zoe. But it is going to be my first time of doing it all from the beginning, like you've had to do.
Yes.
So I'll need to be reminding myself to trust again.
Yes, I think yes. Yeah, because every child is different.
Yeah, it takes them all. You know, I know people whose children have been reading since like 4 or 5 and are incredible readers. And then there's children who aren't reading properly, you know, complex books until 10, 11, because that's just, they're not quite in the mood for it. They're not ready for it. And it's just having that patience, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think also understanding that actually for the vast majority of people, like, it all evens out of, you know, like, by the time they're in their middle teens, it's not like kids who are reading from, like, 3, they're reading, I don't know, like, complex, you know, philosophy textbooks.
Well, Stephen Hawking's like,
yeah, exactly.
Reading.
It's like everybody kind of, by the middle teens, everybody kind of gets to a bit where they can read all of the same sort of stuff. So, you know, it's just, the getting there is an act of... It's kind of an act of, you know, kind of faith in your kid, really, in each individual one.
I think what you just said there is so important, that by the time they reach adulthood or those late teen years and stuff, they, in many parts of kind of education, they all kind of catch up one way or another. You know, they're all, there's no, you know, I don't think that Anya's going to be terribly behind at that stage, you know, whether she's doing it now, which her normal peers at school would be doing, or whether she's doing it in a couple of years. It's fine to trust that she might not understand, you know, actually maths is a bad one for us because she loves maths. But, you know, that as an example, she might not know maths in the same way as her school peers would. But by the time she's a teenager and she's really needing to use maths, she'll be there, you know.
And also it's
just like, it's, you know, having that patience to let them get there when they're ready.
Yeah, totally. And also understanding that actually if there are, but I mean maths is a good example where sometimes there are children who are sort of, I don't know, they just don't like maths for whatever reason, or they're reticent about it, whatever. But then they do other things that are sort of maths related. They like cooking, or they like playing board games or whatever. They don't realise that they're using those skills anyway. And maybe there are a couple of holes and things that need filling in, but as they get older, those holes get filled anyway. And if they don't, and you find them, they can usually be filled quite quickly when they're older, because they're more capable of doing it.
Like Anya realised that she was missing, like for the maths that she wanted to do, she was missing a skill that she needed so she could understand this more complicated maths that she was working on. So she went off and she learnt it. You know, she decided, oh, that's what I'm missing. That's what I need to plug that gap so that I can understand this more. So she went off and she did it. And we did it together. So it was, you know, it is, you know, and as they get older, they're going to want to fill those gaps. You know, if a child as a young adult or as a teenager decides, you know, I want to, you know, follow this kind of career path or something like that, but I need this to do it, then they're more driven to fill that gap. They're more driven to say, do you know what, I need to understand this more to get there. So I think it is just, again, that trust, isn't it?
Yeah, and what we see from people who, you know, home educators and homeschoolers who have children who are older than yours and mine, is that sometimes that means that that kid needs to, like, really get their head down and do more maths. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes it's like, okay, well, you need to catch up on this. And so, like, okay, well, I'm going to work an hour a day or something like that. But because they're motivated and you're supporting them, they'll do that because they're wanting to get to the end.
Yeah, there's a reason for it to be done rather than, oh, we're just doing this because this is what we should be doing. Yeah. It's, there's a real reason for me to want to learn this theory, these skills, you know. So, yeah, it'll all be fine in the end.
Exactly. Well, I guess the thing is, this is about, like the core thing I think about, like, home education is learning all the different ways in which you can learn just by experiencing stuff and doing things. And, you know, I've had this in previous conversations, which is like, we're not going to teach them everything, and school wouldn't teach them everything. Like, nobody comes with a full education. Like, everybody has holes, because we couldn't teach the entirety of history. Never mind, you know what I mean? Whatever. It's like, but it's learning how to learn so that you can go on and learn the things you want to learn as you get older and continue learning.
A lot of people, when strangers start talking to you about it, or when other people who don't know as much about it, you know, like newbies, new families coming to it, they often ask about, oh, well, how do you teach them this and how do you teach them that? And it's like, well, no, we do child-led learning. So, you know, should we follow her interests? I want to enable her to be an independent learner. So I want her to choose what she's learning. Obviously, I'm still encouraging other things and other topics and stuff, but it's not about me teaching her. I'm not sitting down with her and saying, right, today we're learning about this, photosynthesis or whatever. It's not a teacher-child relationship. It's that I'm enabling her to learn. So when she asks me a question, like she may have asked a teacher a question, I don't automatically just go, oh, the answer's 7. You know, I don't automatically just give her the answer from my brain, from my knowledge. I say, okay, well, where could we find that out? You know, and we have, you know, the local library, we have YouTube, you have Google, you have books, you have other people, you know, who you can go and ask questions to. There's, I'm enabling her to go out into the world using every tool available to her to find that knowledge so that when she is a bit older, she is independently learning. She doesn't need, you know, I'm always going to be there, but she doesn't need me to hold her hand or guide her through every particular subject and topic. She's there devouring it all herself, because in these earlier years, I've given her that toolkit. You know, I've given her the understanding of how to go out there and get the knowledge that she wants.
Yeah.
I think that's what I wanted to say.
It was an important, I just felt like it was an important detour to go into, because there will hopefully, you know, be people who are listening who were in our position a couple of years ago and, you know, and were scared. And, you know...
It's terrifying. Starting out is terrifying. And if it's not terrifying, then maybe you haven't thought about it enough. It's, you know, if you don't go into it with a bit of kind of, oh, goodness me, are we doing the right thing? Then, you know, I think it's an important fear to have, isn't it? So that you do think about everything and find out all the kind of tools that you're going to need as a parent.
Yeah, I mean, you want to be able to sleep at night. We're not suggesting that, like, you're only a good, you know, good home ed parent if you, if, you know, if you're lying there at 2 a.m. worrying about it.
Sleep is nice, yeah.
But I think but it's a job.
Yes, you do have to think about it as a responsibility, you know, and with that responsibility, you need to be aware of all the kind of potential issues you might come up against and know how to get help with those and how to deal with those.
Yeah,
I mean, I think that's why we live this modern era that we live in with social media and Facebook and Pinterest and YouTube. It's a great time to be home educating because you are never alone.
Yeah, I call it the hive mind.
That's exactly what I posted on one of my Facebook groups. And I said, hive mind, I need you. So it is. We are a hive of parents doing this.
And the people who came before us. Who either are still writing about stuff and still saying, you know, you are going to be okay, you know, and look at my children, like your children will be fine. All the people who wrote stuff and they're left on blogs that they don't update anymore. Like there's still all the information of people saying, you know, we did this. It was fun. You might want to do it too.
No, it's great. So much information and help out there. It's just Google it, ask a question on a Facebook group, and there's, you know, there's hundreds of people out there willing to talk and help. I personally have talked, I think, 4 or 5 families through starting home education.
Yeah.
Not because I put myself out there as an advocate or anything. You know, I'm not out there advertising my services. No. It's because they've seen me on, you know, it's old friends from Facebook, you know, old university friends. The last lady I spoke to about home education was a girl I did a degree with. And she's decided to pull her 2 kids. So she asked me a million questions and I kind of helped her get through that. And it's wonderful to be able to do that. And I think most home ed families, once we've been doing it a little while, we'll find that people will approach us and say, how do you do this? You know, and we'll have to, all that research that, you know, we've all done to kind of become a home educator, we then pass on to the next generation of home edders.
Well, yeah, because you can help them shortcut a little bit and be like, well, look, that book's not great, but this book's really good. You know what I mean? Or like, well, you should follow, you know, this Facebook group or go to this website. And
yeah, you can just hook them up with all the resources straight away that it's taken you years to kind of find.
Yeah.
Because I joined a Facebook group a couple of weeks ago and I was like, how did I not find this in the first place?
Yeah.
You know, so you're always finding new resources and new groups and things like that. So it's nice to be able to help someone just kind of jumpstart their journey to it.
Yeah. I'm going to go back to my questions list, which seems like a very long time ago now. It sounds a bit weird to say it now, but what do you love about home education?
The freedom. That for me is wonderful. We've got the freedom to follow their interests, to go where we want and when we want. You know, you hear a lot about families paying extortionate fees to go on holiday during the school holidays.
Yeah.
We're not tied down like that. So if it's a, you know, if we think, not that I've got the money to do it right now, but if I wanted to and had the funds, we could fly off for a week any time of the year and enjoy a holiday whenever we feel like it. You know, we also have the freedom to slow down as well. So, you know, I have a 3-year-old and 3-year-olds come with lots of bugs.
Yes.
So We have the freedom to slow our family right down when someone's poorly. You know, I'm not running around doing the school run with a poorly toddler. You know, so if Zoe's sick, Anya's absolutely fine with the fact that, you know what, we're going to have a home day and we're just going to chill out and just go a little bit slowly so that Zoe can kind of recuperate. And the same with Anya. If she's feeling poorly, we can just chill out. It's fine. But I love that we have the freedom to live our lives the way we want to. And to go at our own speed, you know, our mornings are very, very slow because we still have a little one in the house who kind of trundles around and likes to take it easy. And Anya's 8 and a half now, so she's kind of almost sleeping those stereotypical teenage hours almost.
Yeah.
We do get a few 10 a.m. starts out of her occasionally. She's getting there. but then this morning she was up at, you know, 7. So she's still deciding, I think. it's lovely that you can do that. You have the freedom to just live your life with your children at everybody's pace. One thing I found that I wasn't expecting, but after we took Anya out of school, I realized I didn't know her very well. And that was a bizarre thing as a mother to say, like, I don't know her very well, you know.
Yeah.
But now that I spend, you know, as much time with her as I do, I know her. I know her. This sounds really silly, but I know her soul in a way that I didn't before. I know who she is in a far deeper and more meaningful way than I ever did when she was at school. And we're helping her become the person that she wants to be in a way that school was changing that we didn't like. You know, you often hear school parents talking, and we were the same, say, oh, she's changed since she started school. And, you know, we're getting so many bad behaviors from her. And she's, you know, doing all these things that we don't do as a family. And it's school does change them, and not necessarily always for the good. And she changed back to kind of her natural state as Anya. And
yeah.
And I know her in a way that is just magical. It's such a wonderful bond to have. And I do think that having all this time with her and doing everything that we do, it's just such an extra way to be with your child, you know?
Yeah, completely.
And it's wonderful because you see her grow and you see her change. And now I've obviously got a little one who's doing the same. And I'm so blessed. I do think of home education as being blessed with the ability to, you know, to witness it, to witness this person developing. And I wouldn't have had that if she was in the school system. You know, she changed in a way that we were, you know, surprised and not particularly happy with. And I was missing out on so much. You know, I didn't want to miss out on it anymore. So now we really do have such a wonderful time together. And I get to spend all day with my kids. You know, I get to play all day. And I do sometimes have to fit housework in and stuff, you know, occasionally.
A little bit, just every so often.
House is quite messy, thus being called the messy mum. It was a very true to form name.
I think when you're at home all the time, this has come up in previous interviews, like, even if you're out and about and doing stuff in the world and part of other groups and whatever, like, you spend a lot more time at home as a home yeah. educating family than a family that's, you know, where the house is empty because people are at work and people are at school. It's like the house is properly lived in, and you have to accept it, and the people around yeah. you have to accept it.
it's definitely like that. Don't get me wrong, I could do with some proper clearing up at the same time. I'm a bit messier than most, but at the same time, you do kind of have to let go of that. Your house is not going to look pristine, but no. Who cares? You're there having a great time with your kids. You can clear up later, you know?
Yeah, totally. So what's the hardest part?
I think the hardest part is, well, there's a couple of things. You do, as time goes on, you do have the wobbles. You know, you have those times when nothing's going to plan. You think, we haven't done any work. Like, we haven't done anything in ages. Is she learning enough? have I dropped the ball somewhere? You know, you have all those worries and you have that, I call them wobbles.
Yeah.
You know, like where you start thinking, oh gosh, should she be in school? You know, like, should, yeah, have I done something terrible here? And I think as a caring parent, we probably all feel that way sometimes. We all reevaluate and think, is this the right thing? You very quickly realize, gosh, yes it is. But we all have, and especially after a bad day, we all have bad days. And it's after a bad day you suddenly think, oh, I'm doing a terrible job, I'm the worst mum ever, this, why did I do this, you know? And it's, I think those days are really tough. And I think as home educators, we don't talk about those days enough. You know, if I found it's really often, if I talk to friends and family who aren't home educators and say, oh, it's been a really rough week, or we had a terrible day,
mm-hmm,
the first thing they do is say, well, if she was in school, you wouldn't be having this. And it's like, no, this is because she's a normal 8-year-old child who is having a problem with this, or it's just because we had a crappy day, you know? Yeah. And, you know, school mums have rubbish days too. We all have them. But as home educators, the first thing that's blamed, because we obviously have to assign blame for some reason, mm-hmm, you know, the first thing that's blamed is our choice to home educate. So we feel like we can't talk about those bad days, bad weeks, you know, when we have the wobbles. It's just this silent thing we all have to kind of keep hold of so that no one judges us for being home educators. So I think that's a tough one, getting through those bad days. And I find after a few years of having wobbly days here and there, I found that to get through it, I just kind of have to reset. I have to have like a really fun day. We just throw everything out the window and we go to the park, or we go to the beach, or we do baking, or, you know, we just do something really simple and really fun just to reground us, just to take us back to center, so to speak, and just have like a really slow day. And I find that really helps me just to breathe and relax and remind me that this is the right decision. We just had a bad day. It's fine. And then the next day, lo and behold, everything's going wonderfully again. And it was just a bad day. I think the other thing that isn't something to take lightly is the kind of the financial sacrifice that it can bring.
Yeah.
You know, my husband and I, if we weren't home educating, we would both work. But because we made the decision to home educate, my husband works and I'm a stay-at-home mum. And that is obviously sacrificing a potential second income. And it was something we had to seriously think about. You know, we live a very simple lifestyle and we're very happy with that. But, you know, I think if you want a very lavish lifestyle, if you want lots and lots of holidays and things like that, and you don't have a massive income, then that's something to take into account. If you're going to be unhappy kind of sacrificing that, then it's something to seriously think about. So it's not bad for us. Sometimes I could do with a few more pennies, don't get me wrong,
mm-hmm,
but it is something for people to think about when they're considering home education. Like, are you happy to give up the foreign holiday this year? Are you happy to not be able to afford the full Sky package? You know, you have to balance it out and make the right decision for what you need to live a happy life. And for us, we're happy with a simple life that gives us this time with our children. But I completely respect the fact that for other people, there might be some things that they're not happy to give up and that is a part of who they are as a person or as a family.
Yeah, or just be in a situation where just, you know, one income is not enough that it could be a one income household sort of thing.
Yes. Yeah, we're very lucky in that, don't get me wrong, we are still very low income.
Yeah.
But, you know, my husband has a good job. It's a stable job and it pays relatively well for the area that we're in.
Yeah.
But it's not lavish by any stretch of the imagination. He's not, you know, he's not sitting in a beautiful office, you know, with lots of people running around after him. He works in a factory and he works really hard. So if one income can do it, fantastic, and you're happy with the lifestyle that one income affords you, then great. But if that one income is too low, then there's some serious decisions that you need to really think about. I think that's something that is important to really think about when you're making the decision. It seems kind of frivolous, but you still need to be able to put food on the table. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, totally. Well, also, and it's like, even if you don't know how long you're going to home educate for, or you're just like, okay, we're going to do it for this year and see how we get on or whatever, you know, you want to be able to make the decision so that you could commit longer term, you know, unless like your circumstances yes. dramatically changed or whatever, you yeah. know, you don't really want to make a decision. So, well, we can home educate this year, but only because we've got these savings. And then, you know,
then we've got, yeah,
then something else has got to happen. I mean, you know, there mm. are people who manage to juggle, you know, part-time work or whatever, but there's, you know, and home educate. But
oh yeah, I know, don't get me wrong, I know plenty of home ed mums. I say mums, there's obviously dads doing it as well. It's just it the lot, you know, in a lot of families it's the mum.
Yeah.
So I know a lot of home ed parents and mums in particular who are doing part-time work or online work, who are writing, who are running online businesses. There is things that you can do if yeah. you have those skills or if you're willing to get those skills. But you kind of have to figure it out and you have to think about it. But I would hate to put anyone off because they think, oh, I'll be poor, I can't do that. There are ways to work around it, but you do. Yeah, you have to be realistic and you have to be, you know, if your one income that's going to be coming in isn't astronomical, then you do have to go, well, we can sacrifice this because in the long term, we're going to be so much happier.
Yeah.
So it is just a juggle that you need to figure out. I'm saying all this, but obviously there's a lot of single parents that are home educating as well, and they work it out somehow. So it's just being serious and making that decision with everything in mind and figuring out a plan.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think one of the important things to say, particularly in the early years, is despite what you see on the internet, home education doesn't have to be expensive.
Do you know what? It's such a common question, isn't it? It's like, how do you afford it? And what I say to everyone who asks me that, you know, a lady asked me it in the park last week, and I was like, all you need is a library card. And for us, we need internet. Yeah. Personally, I feel like internet is a really important one for us. You know, library card, internet. And because we live in South Devon, which is, you know, countryside, a lot of it,
yeah.
I personally couldn't do it without access to a car
yeah.
because a lot of the groups we go to are kind of, you know, there's beautiful groups that are happening up on Dartmoor and down at the seaside. And so there's a lot of miles to cover for us personally in this part of the country
yeah.
to get to all the groups we go to. But saying that, I have home ed friends who also live locally who don't drive, and they work it out via buses and trains and things. So you don't need a lot of money to do it. It can be done with less money. So I think some people are always worried that it's going to cost thousands and thousands of pounds, and it doesn't have to.
I think you could spend thousands of pounds if you really
absolutely.
Wanted to.
Goodness me, if I won the lottery, you know, I would go all out and buy so much stuff. But whether that stuff would ever get used, who knows?
Yeah.
my kid's still happy with the cardboard box, you know?
Yeah.
But obviously if I had more money, I'd probably do more and I'd buy more and things. But I'm giving them both the education that they want and the education that they need on a very low income, and we're doing just fine. So it is accessible for all incomes, definitely.
Yeah, I think you just have to think about it. I think one of the roles as home ed parents is to get the maximum bang for your buck. Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, in fact, it's a later question. I got a later question about like what's going on in your area, but I mean, certainly in our area, there's so much stuff going on. If you signed up to everything, it would be so incredibly expensive.
Yeah.
So it kind of comes down to, okay, what are they really interested in? And what can we sort of sprinkle through our week? Hopefully some things that are free, you know, meetups and stuff, and maybe one or two things that are actually going to cost some money, you know, that you can fit into a budget of sorts.
Yes.
You know, and
we're very much like that. we have free stuff. We have stuff that we pay for. We have groups that, you know, Anya goes to a club that's once a month. It costs about £17. And it's a YouTube club. So it's this company in Exeter called Tubers who run like a club that teaches children about YouTube and how to make YouTube videos and how to edit them using like professional software. They use virtual reality goggles. They learn about internet safety. And we pay that because she loves it. She absolutely loves it. And it's once a month. And it's about, you know, if she stopped loving it, we'd stop going. You know, it's not one of those things where we're like, well, we've paid for it, so you have to go. Yeah. You know, if a child's interests change, which they do, you know, I went through so many different fads as a young child, horse riding and piano playing and all those kind of things, you know, and I think with home ed, it's very, you know, you don't want to be wasting money forcing them to do something because you feel like, well, you should be learning to play piano or you should be horse riding. You've made a commitment. Actually, if they're genuinely, do you know what, I'm done with this, then great, you've freed up those funds to go towards the next thing, you know?
And that seems like a pretty good place to stop this week. Part two will be available in a week's time rather than a fortnight, because otherwise I feel like I'm leaving you hanging. If you want to find out more about any of the things we talk about in this episode, or to leave a comment, please go to the show notes at the blog at learninginanoxfordkitchen.co.uk and click on the link to the Home Ed Voices podcast, or follow the link on Instagram at Home Ed Voices Podcast. This is episode number 4. If you want to support the show, please rate and review at Apple Podcast, as this helps more people find out about it. The Home Ed Voices Podcast is an independent production and is created, hosted and produced by me, Katie Henrod. You can subscribe to the podcast at Apple Podcast, Google Play, Stitcher or anywhere else where podcasts are found. I'll be back with part 2 of this bumper episode next week. And until then, here's to more Home Ed adventures.